Thank you guys for coming today, and thank you for coming on time. That really means a lot to me. It helps me worship the Lord to worship alongside you. And I just want you to know, God loves you. I love you. We love you. We're for you, not against you, wherever you are. So I hope you can kind of relax, and I really think you're going to enjoy this new series of messages that we're starting today. To get our minds warmed up, I'd like to do sort of an interactive activity, and you're going to need the little Connect card that is inside the playbill you were handed on the way in. And you'll also need something to write with. If you don't have a pen, maybe you can share with somebody beside you. But here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you 60 seconds, and I just want you to write out three dreams that you have for yourself. And don't overthink this, and it's okay if they're silly. It's okay if they're really small. Like, I want to visit the Transit Museum. I've never done it before. I can get that done in one day, but that's a dream that I have. It's okay if they're really big. I want to learn how to speak Spanish. That's going to take years. But whatever they're about, and think career, accomplishments, adventure, travel, spiritual, emotional, relational, legacy, character, just think in all these different categories, and try to come up with at least three dreams. You have 60 seconds to write them down, starting now. Go. Yeah, oh, write it on the back of the Connect card. Good question. If you don't have a pen and no one near you has a pen, you can go to the back. There's a bunch of pens at the information table. Three dreams, you might actually be able to just remember them, but it's good to write them down. Maybe 30 more seconds. Don't overthink it. Just any dream. Maybe there's a book you've always wanted to read or write. Now you're going to share these dreams with somebody near you, so do take the time to come up with three. You've got 20 more seconds, three or more. Travel someplace you've wanted to visit, a skill you've always wanted to develop. 10 seconds. And you've got 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You can write it wherever you want. It's fine. Okay, now, I'm going to give you another 60 seconds, and I just want you to turn to somebody close to you, a partner up or maybe little groups of three, and just share. You don't have time to really explain them, but just kind of share them, all right? You've got 60 seconds, go. Share with somebody and let them share with you. Okay, 30 seconds. If you haven't switched, switch. Make sure you hear from the other person. Okay, try to land the plane. You got 10 seconds. And finish up in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and done. Okay, now I would like to hear some of them. If you guys are, if there are any brave souls out there, just call them out. What are some of your dreams?
I want to tackle Valentin.
That's doable, like right now. Hold on, could you guys both stand up real quick? So, Alexido, Valentin, just dreaming big, but it's a good dream. Okay, go to Greece. Others?
Get married.
Oh, there's a lot of get marrieds. Okay. What's that?
Be a size 4.
Be a size 4. Good. Okay, good dream. I like it. Okay, others? The puppet Christmas show. We are here for you. We are here to make your dream come true. Coming to a church that you all know and love, the puppet Christmas show. Other dreams? Run a marathon. Nice. What was that, Glenn?
A successful art career.
Okay, that's like a big, like a lifelong You know, it's not like you check that off, like, oh, now I'm done. You're kind of always working on that. What was that? But it'd be great if it could start immediately being successful and then continue to be successful for the rest of his life. Let me have two or three more other things.
Integrity.
That's beautiful. And that is like an ongoing character thing, like being a person of integrity never ends.
Go to the beach.
That's great. I want to go to the beach right now.
Sail around the Cape of Good Hope.
Sail around the Cape of Good Hope. Wow. That's intense. That's a great dream. I mean, that's like adventure, accomplishment. It's kind of like a summit Mount Everest kind of thing. That's intense.
Go to CYY.
Go to CYY. A bunch of you are going to do that here shortly. That's good. Okay. Well, let me just say this. It was fun for me to watch you guys because the moment you started sharing your dreams, like everyone's face just lit up. Like there's something about dreams that just gets to like the heart of who you are and excitement and the good that God intended when he made you. And it was just fun to watch the joy in the room, the warmth. And also, look how quickly we uncovered a bunch of dreams. Imagine if we dug a little bit deeper. Like, that was just like a little scratch, just scratched the surface, and it was like, wah, dreams just sprung out. Imagine if we dug a little bit deeper, how many dreams God has bound up in our hearts from when we were little, which is part of what we're going to do throughout the course of this series. We're going to try to get at that stuff, get those dreams out, dust them off, look at them, figure them out, how to pursue them, what comes from God, what doesn't, and all that sort of thing, which is part of what we want to do as we go through this series. But what I want you to notice to start is that there's all different kinds of dreams. There's really little dreams like going to the beach or tackling Valentine. Well, that might be a medium-sized dream, but there's little dreams you could do right away. There's other dreams that might take years to accomplish. I've always wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail from beginning to end. That'll take months to do and probably months to prepare for, and honestly, I don't know when I'll ever have time to do it, so it'll probably take years to accomplish. But there's dreams like that. There's ongoing dreams like integrity, or maybe you want to be more outgoing or whatever. There's relational dreams. So notice that. There's little dreams. There's medium dreams. There's big dreams. Some dreams you can do in a day, some in a year, some 10 years, some for the rest of your life. I also want you to notice that dreams are more or less under our control. Like, some dreams are almost entirely under your control, some are almost entirely out of your control, and some, most, are a mixture. So take, for example, if you had a dream to write a book, well, writing the book part is mostly in your control, just getting a book written. That you just have to do the work, and you'll have a book written. Now, if your dream is to publish a book, now part of that is sort of outside of your control a little bit. Or say you had a dream to, like, have children, right? Have babies. Well, there is one thing you could do that would greatly increase your odds of having babies. But then after you've done that, there's a lot of blessing or luck or whatever that comes into play about whether or not you actually have babies. So part of that's in your control and part of that's not in your control. And that's a really important thing to realize when you start thinking about your dreams. I also want to say that there is a difference, a subtle but significant difference between our own dreams and God's dreams for us. Our own dreams can be all over the map and they can be great or whatever. Some of them endure, some don't. Like, for example, when I was a little kid, I really wanted to be a computer programmer because I wanted to make video games. And that dream crumbled before my eyes in my C++ programming class in college when I realized, which that's a programming language. That's not the grade that I got in the class. I dropped the class, so all the tech geeks were like, they got that. I looked around the class and I was like, everybody else is having fun. This guy over here is like crafting a virus that he's messing with that guy's computer with. And I was the only one that was completely bored, and I switched to English Lit. Another dream I had when I was a kid was I was convinced for years I wanted to be a marine biologist because I am both fascinated and terrified of sharks. But I had this killer idea. I was like, okay, sharks are carnivores. They only like to eat meat. So I'm going to get a bunch of sharks. I was a little kid. I'm going to get a bunch of sharks, and I'm going to feed them veggies because that'll make them like super sharks, right? If you eat your veggies. I mean, that's what everyone kept telling me. Like, eat your broccoli, it's going to make you stronger. So obviously I didn't have a really good mind for marine biology when I was little, but marine biologists out there, I'm giving you pearls, feed your sharks broccoli. I don't think that would do anything. So those didn't endure, but I also had a dream to be a writer, and now I am a writer, and that dream is endure. I still want to be a writer. There's still things that I want to write. I always wanted to be married, and now I am married, and as it turns out, I still want to be married. Lindsay and I just celebrated 9 years the other day, and I think we're good for 9 more. You going to keep doing this? Okay. So we're good for at least 9 more. So some dreams are short-lived, some dreams endure, some dreams are just from us, and some dreams are from God, and a lot of times they look identical. The difference can be so subtle, but it's so significant, because sometimes the same dream could be your dream and God's dream, and I even think God communicates his dreams for you through your own dreams for yourself, but the differences often come in the hows and the whys and the why fors. So for example, say you have a dream to write a book, and very often I think God's dream for you is to write a book, which is part of why you want to write a book. But if your dream, if you're thinking like, I want to write a book because it's an easy life and I can get the thing done and then somebody else will like do all this work and market it and then royalty checks will come in and I'll be able to sit back and enjoy this life of luxury or whatever, your dreams, and dream on, because I published a couple of books and it doesn't work that way. And all the writers that I know work their tails off, so it's just not like that. Now, if on the other hand you're like, I want to write a book because I want to make a difference in people's lives, I want to contribute to the conversation, I want to be faithful to this calling that I feel like I have from the Lord, or be obedient to this dream that I think is coming from him, and so I want to do it for him, God's dream. Very similar to that. Say you have a dream that you want to get married. If you're thinking, I want to get married because I want someone to take care of me, I'm lonely, and I'm lacking, and that will complete me, and I'd like someone to kind of provide for me, and life is really hard, and I'd like someone to help me with this difficult life, and I need someone to love me, that is your dream. But if, on the other hand, you're like, I do want all that stuff, but I'm complete in Christ. My relationship with God is good, and I actually have extra love to share with somebody else, and I'm looking for someone that I could serve. I'm looking for someone that I could sort of benefit and help make their life better. Well, now you've kind of gotten into God's dreams. I'm looking to form a relationship that'll somehow show the world something of the mystery of the way God loves us. Now you're talking about God's dreams. And it is so critical to understand dreams, your own dreams and God's dreams for you, because if you don't, you can really condemn yourself to a life that's lacking. For example, if you don't dream at all, if you never dream and you neglect your dreams, you condemn yourself to a life with no passion. You know, you condemn yourself to a life of numbness. If you recognize your dreams, but you shrink back, you have a moment to take a step, but you chicken out, you condemn yourself to a life of regret. And if you don't understand God's dreams for you, you might succeed in your own dreams, but you condemn yourself to a life of meaninglessness. And maybe worst of all, if you don't understand how difficult this can be, if you don't get how much stands in between where you are today and where God is trying to take you, then you condemn yourself to a life of frustration and confusion, which is precisely why I want us to look at the Bible today, because the Bible has a lot to say about dreams. It has a lot to say about our dreams and how God communicates his dreams for us through our dreams, and what it takes to recognize them and pursue them, and it's stuff that we really need to understand. So we're going to go look at the life of Joseph. And this is not the Joseph that was Jesus' earthly father, Joseph. This is one of the first characters in the Bible. And his story is told in one of the earliest surviving documents that humans have ever created, the book of Genesis. And the book of Genesis gives several chapters to Joseph's life. There are not many characters in the Bible that get several chapters of real estate in Scripture. So God, when God was inspiring the Bible, he felt like this story was really important for us, and we really needed a lot of detail about this story. And it is an incredible story. Whether you've never heard the story of Joseph or you've read it 100 times, you're really going to appreciate this series, because it's just an amazing story with lots of twists and turns. And embedded in this story is all kinds of stuff that we need to understand today about dreams, God's dreams for us, and how he means to fulfill them through us. So I want to start the story. We're going to look at the book of Genesis. And if you're new to navigating the Bible, you can look like a pro, because it's the very first book in the Bible. So you can be like, oh, Genesis, I know right where that is. It's the first one. So if you have a Bible with you or an app on your phone, if you don't, download one right now. Get a Bible from the back and take it home with you. But we're going to go through a bunch of this story, and it's really going to benefit you to read it yourself. We'll also put it up on the screen if you don't have a Bible with you, but Find Genesis chapter 37, and we're going to pick up the story of Joseph. And I really want you to pay attention to what this story has to say about dreams and God's dreams for us. So we're going to pick up the story in Genesis 37, verse 3, kind of setting the scene. It says, now Israel and Jacob, I just want to mention, are the same guy in the Bible. That's really confusing. I'll tell you another time how he got two names, but if you see Jacob or Israel, same guy. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. Now, I just want to pause and make sure we kind of understand the scene going on here. Israel, or Jacob, he had 12 sons by four different women, two wives and two kind of ladies on the side. And now, if you grew up your whole life like I did, mom and dad that stayed together your whole life, then you might have a hard time imagining a family like this. But I know a lot of us in this room, right away, you kind of perk up because you're like, okay. One dad and several women and a bunch of different half-brothers and sisters. Like, I get that family, so you can find yourself in that story. But this family was kind of dysfunctional in a number of different ways. Notice what he says. It says that Israel's favorite son was Joseph. He loved him more than his other brothers. Now, if you grew up in a family that played favorites, I know that's a touchy subject for you because it's very painful. But Israel definitely played favorites. Joseph was the firstborn of Rachel, who was the love of Israel's life, of Jacob's life. And he had these kids from these other women, but Rachel was really, really the apple of his eye. And then finally, he had a son by her named Joseph, and he had another son named Benjamin. And so those two, not only are they the babies, but they're the two sons by this woman that Israel loved so much. So Joseph is actually the second to youngest son, but in many ways, he's kind of the baby of the family because he was born to Rachel. Now, in really healthy families, you know, birth order dynamics come into play. You know, the firstborn has more responsibility, the middle kids are ignored, the baby gets more attention, all that kind of stuff. In really healthy families, healthy parents attempt to kind of mitigate those factors. You know, they don't just heap on extra responsibility on the firstborn. They don't totally ignore the middle kids. They don't heap on extra love and attention and favor on the baby. Not Israel, though, not Jacob. He did the opposite. He was like, unabashedly, I love this kid more than I love the rest of you. And just in case there's any doubt about it, he dressed Joseph differently. He put Joseph in this ornate robe. Now, the word ornate there is kind of an interesting word. It's one of the few words in the original languages that we don't have a good translation for. There are really not many of these words, but we don't really know what that word means. But scholars who really dig into this stuff, they think it says something about it being multicolored. And so you'll see in other translations, like the American Standard Version here, that he made him a coat of many colors. And so if you're familiar with the musical, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, that's actually kind of based on the reality of the original text, that this text seems to say he had this colorful coat on, made of these different materials. So not only is Joseph the favorite, but everybody knows it. I mean, he's the favored child, the baby of the family, and he's walking around like a peacock. He has this beautiful robe on. So it's not a surprise that his brothers didn't appreciate him that much. Verse 4, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Now, quick word in their defense. In the verses preceding this passage that we're not going to look at, it says that Joseph came back from the fields where his brothers were tending the flocks, and he delivered a bad report to their father about them. So this kid's a tattletale. I mean, this kid was a snitch. No wonder his brothers were kind of irritated with him. At this point in the story, Joseph is about 17 years old. He's young. I think he's naive. I don't think he's really evil. I don't think he's a braggart. I don't think he's rubbing this in his brothers' faces. He's favored by his father, and he's the baby, and he's always had it good, and he doesn't know what that means, and I think that that is ruffling some feathers. But they do not like him for that, and sometimes, whether Joseph meant it or not, he said and did things that kind of rubbed salt into the wound, like in verse 5. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose up and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. Now, nobody likes that. even if it's true, no one likes that. If you guys came in this morning and I was like, hey guys, I had this dream last night. This is really cool. Do you think this will come true? All of you bowed down to me. You'd be like, bump this church. I'm not going to this church. I mean, nobody likes that, even if it's true. So Joseph is doing things to kind of antagonize this hatred, and obviously his brothers are jealous. In verse 8, his brothers said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. Listen, he said, I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, what is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now, those are some interesting dreams. And I don't think that Joseph was a braggart. I don't think he was like rubbing this in his brothers' faces. I just think he was naive. And he was really just like, isn't that a crazy dream? Do you think that would actually come true? And didn't have the sense or the emotional intelligence to realize the raw nerves that he was poking with his brothers. And they're just getting madder and madder and madder. I want to pause the story right now to point out something important, though. And that is, I want you to notice that Joseph's dreams, they didn't come from him. They were kind of given to him. Joseph didn't just go off and, like, cook up a dream. Like, it wasn't like me just going off and being like, oh, I got a dream. I'm going to play for the NBA. 36, my vert is about a half an inch, and I don't even like basketball. So it's not like that, where it's like working against what God has given me. Joseph's dreams were given to him. So whether true or not, whether whatever, it's something that was sort of given to him. And I just want you to stop and think about our own dreams and where they come from. And it is as if they are given to you. Now, many of us have dreams from when we were very, very little. And why is it? Why is it that, you know, I heard somebody say they want to run a marathon, and somebody else would be like, never. That is not my dream. Someone might be like, I really want to visit Bangladesh. And someone's like, why would you want to do that? Somebody wants to write a book, and someone else is like, what? That's horrible. I'm not going to sit down and write in a room all day long. Like, where does that come from? I mean, whether you're born with it or whether you learn them when you're really young or whether they're given to you by kindly caretakers and parents and teachers or wherever they come from, they're sort of given to you. These deep dreams are part of who you are. And I think that's really important to point out because there's a difference between just cooking stuff up and sort of scratching things open and finding out what's already there, what's already been given to you. And it's important to recognize that. It's important to know the difference between just your own dreams and God's dreams for you because your own dreams may or may not come true. And you may or may not be glad they did if they do. God's dreams, on the other hand, come true. But there's something you really need to understand. This world will oppose God's dreams for you. Este mundo se opondrá a los sueños de Dios para ti. This world will oppose God's dreams for you. And it's critical for you to understand that, or you'll never make it. So many people give up at the first sign of difficulty because they mistake difficulty for God, that not really being what God wants. And it was absolutely true for Joseph. At this point in the story, Israel sends Joseph out to find his brothers and bring back another report about how the flocks are doing. And so he does some detective work. He goes to a field. They point him over here. He's approaching his brothers, and they see him when he's coming from a long way off, and a plot is hatched. Daddy is not around to protect him. And Joseph has no idea the mortal danger that he is in. Look at verse 18. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Now let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. This world will oppose God's dreams for you. If you attempt to pursue God's dreams for you, not everybody is going to like it. It was certainly true for Joseph. Now Reuben, the oldest brother, didn't really want to have anything to do with this. Maybe because he was the firstborn and the oldest, maybe he was wiser than the rest. But he says, no, let's not kill him. Don't shed his blood. Let's just throw him in one of the cisterns. And in his mind, he was thinking, the text says, and I'll come back later. I'll sneak back and rescue him and bring him back to his father. But so he persuades them, okay, we won't shed his blood. We'll just throw him in one of the cisterns. And so Joseph shows up, and the trap is sprung in verse 23. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, now, that's just cold. They throw him in the cistern, and then they sit down to eat their meal. I mean, I'm sorry, that's like some Monty Python stuff right there. Like, Joseph is in the background in the cistern like, hey, guys, this isn't funny anymore. And they're all like, wow, this hummus is spicy, or whatever they were eating back then. That's just cold. And then opportunity strikes, verse 25. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Judah, another one of his brothers, has this great idea. He says, why kill him when we can sell him? And so this caravan of traders come along, and they've probably got spices and luxury items, oil and almonds or whatever, loaded up on wagons or pack animals or whatever, and they're heading down to Egypt to trade this stuff. And so they go pluck Joseph out of the cistern, and they sell him for 20 shekels of silver. Now, we can't really know exactly how much money that is, because the ancient shekel, we really don't know exactly how much it weighed. And we also don't really know exactly how much silver was valued in the very ancient days. However, the best comparison we have is in Exodus 21, it values the price of a slave's life at 30 shekels of silver. So a slave is 30 shekels of silver. Joseph was sold for 20 shekels of silver, so they sold him cheap. Our best estimate, scholars' best estimate, is that it's about 8 ounces of silver, which in today's money is about $200. So $200 split 10 ways or 9 ways or whatever. It's like $20 a person. It's beer money. And I say that not like trying to be funny. Like, they sold their brother. I don't care how annoying he was. They sold their brother into slavery for beer money. This world will oppose God's dreams for you. It's critical to understand this because so many people give up at the first sign of difficulty. Most of the rest give up after months or years of difficulty, and I wonder how many people give up when they're this close. And so many of the rest of us never even start down the path because you see how difficult it will be to pursue God's dreams for you. But that is exactly what I want to encourage you to do today. I want to encourage you to take the first big step down this path of discovering God's dreams for you. And so I want to give you kind of a homework assignment. But I don't want you to cringe at that because this is a good homework assignment. I think you're actually going to really enjoy it. This is definitely a get to do, not you don't have to do this. You don't have to do it. But with the playbill you were given, hopefully you were given another little worksheet that's folded in half that I saw some of you looking at. And here's what I want to ask you to do. Sometime over the next several days, or definitely over the next 2 weeks before we meet back here, find some time. It'd be great if you could find an hour and sit down and prayerfully work your way through that sheet. I don't care where you're at in your walk with the Lord, how old you are, how long you've been around, how much you've thought about your dreams, find some time to do this afresh with the Lord. Now, I know we're busy, and for some of you, you're going to need to put it in your calendar to find an hour. Maybe if you're just totally busy, you'll have to do it in 15-minute pieces when you can snatch 15 minutes. But I think it's safe to say that anyone who really wants to could find an hour sometime over the next 2 weeks to do this, and I hope that you will. Here's how it's going to work. The instructions are really explanatory, so I'm not going to belabor this. You can just read through it. But basically, step one is you're just going to generate as many dreams as you possibly can. Just like we did at the beginning of this message. I put 60 lines in that thing for you. If you can do 100, even better. But in an hour, you'll be shocked at how many you can come up with. You'll probably get 50 or 60 in an hour. I want you to generate dreams in all the different categories that that thing recommends. Career, travel, adventure, relationships, emotional, spiritual, character, legacy. Just try to get a few in all of those different categories. And think all different size dreams. Think quick little short dreams, silly dreams, medium-sized dreams, dreams that would take years to accomplish, and dreams that you never accomplish, like earlier Marvin said, legacy, like a lifelong, integrity. I want to operate with integrity. So that's just lifelong kind of a dream. And just try to generate them. Don't filter them. Don't censor yourself. It's okay if it sounds crazy. If you want to summit Mount Everest, put that on there. It's okay if you don't do it, but get the dream on there. Also, think about God's dreams for you. Think about the spiritual category. So, like, have you dreamed about reading the Bible cover to cover, but you just never gotten around to it? Put that on there. Or maybe you've never fasted and you'd like to fast. Put that on there. Or maybe you're like dreaming about leading one of our everyday groups. Put that on there, like a ministry dream, character dreams. Really pay attention to those God dreams for you. Then step two is, if you flip that thing over to the back, you'll notice there's some questions where you kind of prayerfully ask God to point out one of those dreams to focus on right now. And then those questions will help you think through, what would it mean to accomplish this? How difficult would it be? What opposes me? And I want you to just take some time with those questions. And then, lastly, find somebody to share this with. You know, you did this work, and find someone to talk to about with these dreams. If you're not a part of an everyday group, get involved in an everyday group, because that's the easiest place to do it. And everyday group leaders, maybe during the mealtime at your next group, you want to encourage your people to, like, share these dreams with each other. And maybe you want to grab a couple extra of those sheets and bring with you. But get a cup of coffee with someone, get a drink with somebody, get together and share these dreams, because it's in the context of community that this stuff really comes to life. On that note, one little extra thing is, take an extra one of those with you. If your husband, wife, kids, roommate, brother, sister, whoever isn't here, take one to them, tell them the story of Joseph, encourage them to start brainstorming their dreams, or somebody you know that you think would like to be a part of this church, but just you've never bothered to ask them. Everybody has dreams, I'm telling you. People want to pursue their dreams. Give them one of these sheets and explain what we're doing as a church and encourage them to come back. But it's really important to us that we establish a culture of dreaming, that this church is a place where we dream and we know our dreams and we talk about dreams and we just encourage each other and support each other, give and get encouragement about our dreams, because this world will oppose God's dreams for you and you will not always have the support of people around you. At this point in the story, Joseph is all alone. He doesn't have anybody getting his back. Look at verse, Reuben almost does, but it's a little bit too little too late. He comes back to check on the cistern, and Joseph isn't there. Now, that tells us something interesting, because Reuben would have known Joseph wasn't there if he had sold him into slavery with his brothers. So we know that Reuben didn't take part in that, because he comes back to the cistern, and he's surprised it's empty, and he's mortified. He rips his clothes, which in the ancient Near East was a sign of mourning, and he goes back to his brothers, and he says, "The boy isn't there. Where do I turn now?" And they develop a ruse. They slaughter a goat, they take the blood, and they splatter it all over his ornate robe. And they travel back to his father, and they present the robe to his father, and they say, "Here, examine this. Is this your son's robe?" And Jacob is devastated. In verse 33, it says, "He recognized it and said, 'It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces.' Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. 'No,' he said, 'I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave.' So his father wept for him." Now, talk about a reversal of fortune. This robe that had been the symbol of his father's favor was now splattered with blood. And the only one that really cared about Joseph, the only one that really loved him, thinks he's dead. And nobody even knows where he is. Verse 36, "Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard." Joseph was once the favored son, and now property, shackled, forced to march to Egypt, and then sold again, this time to one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, Potiphar. Joseph's brothers, his older brothers, they were supposed to protect him and bring him along and love him, but they turned out to be his worst enemies. Joseph was betrayed. He was betrayed. Sold down the river, stabbed in the back, smiling faces, done dirty, betrayed. God had given him this dream that one day his brothers were going to bow down to him. But right now, reality is falling pretty far short of God's dreams for him. I mean, so far from wanting to serve him, his brothers wanted to kill him, and they sold him for silver. But little did Joseph know, and as we will discover as we go through this series together, that these horrific setbacks were actually steps toward the prize. Because God was working in Joseph's life, as he so often does, behind the scenes. And while this world will oppose God's dreams for you, so often God uses that very opposition in order to fulfill his dreams for you. He uses it to train us and grow us and teach us and prepare us and strengthen us and shape our hearts. And sometimes God is out there reshaping things, and the reshaping is painful, and it requires patience and perseverance. But just as God did then, he does today. I see it all the time. I know someone who's a part of this church whose family is just a complete mess when it comes to money. They manage money terribly. They're constantly getting in trouble with money. They're needing to be bailed out about money, and they're constantly leaning on him and putting guilt on him to bail them out. And this guy ended up working in the financial industry, in part out of a sense of calling from God to apply godly principles to money management. I know another guy in this church who is one of the gentlest fathers I know, in part because his own dad was not. I did not learn to read until third grade, in part because I needed glasses and nobody knew it, and in part because I kind of faked it until I hit the word elephant in third grade. I remember it clearly. Super embarrassing. I just could not read. And then that launched me into one of the most embarrassing, painful obstacles of my young life, of learning to read long after all the other kids had learned to read. And now, then I was an English lit major in college, and now I've published a couple of books, and I make my living writing and speaking, and time off for me is time with a book of poetry or a page turner, and I can't even imagine my life without words. But as it turns out, God used the opposition to his dreams for me in order to fulfill his dreams for me. And it's exactly true for you, too. I don't know where you guys are in this story. We unfortunately do not have the benefit of looking back over our whole story from beginning to end like we can with Joseph's story. Not until the other side of the grave can we do that. So you're in the middle of it right now. And maybe you are, I don't even know what God's dreams are for me. Or maybe you kind of have an idea, but it's fuzzy. Or maybe you know a dream or two, but you don't really know how to begin. Or maybe you tried to begin, and the opposition beat you down. Or maybe you started to see the dream come together, and then the rug got yanked out from under you, just like it did for Joseph in this story. Or maybe you fulfilled the dream or two, and your deal is, so what does this mean? How is this God's dream? What am I supposed to do with this success now? Wherever you are in the story, a point will come in your life where you're able to look back over your life and see how God used the challenges you faced in order to fulfill his will for you. At this point in the story, the opposition to and fulfillment of Joseph, God's dreams for Joseph, is only just beginning. To find out what happens next for him, come back here in 2 weeks for Act 2, Enslaved. Or, better yet, don't wait that long. Just read it for yourself. But to find out what happens next for you, find an hour sometime over these next 2 weeks. Get alone with the Lord. Ask him to guide you and trust that he answers prayers like that, that are honestly spoken, and trust he will guide you. And start generating these dreams. Pick one, think it through, find someone to share it with, and you will have made a huge, significant step towards discovering God's dreams for you. I hope that you do.